Ready?
I am, darling.
Ready?
I am, dear.
I'm waiting for you to say you're ready. Ready?
I'm ready.
One, two, three, four!
Hi, I'm Scott!
What the ever-loving fuck was that?
Just my energy, because I'm so... Who are you?
I'm Daniel, and... All right, you're right. I screwed that up. Hi, I'm Daniel. What the fuck was that?
I'm just juicing my energy. Juicing it up.
It is amazing, the energy level difference between our chat pre-show,
yes,
where it's like,
you can hear,
life sucks, and I can't, I hate everything, and goddamn motherfucker, and then we play the music, and then suddenly, yeah, Mr. Happy comes out.
Oh, well, I hope not. Mr. Happy's a little old now, and he's not as happy as he used to be. I will tell you this much, however, because I have been in show business for, these 40 years, mm-hmm. more if you count my schooling, mm-hmm. I know how to phonally juice it up when necessary, because, darling, the show must go on.
Okay. How you doing, Scott?
You know, the thing is, I'm doing okay. I have come to realize, and I am going to ask how you are. Mm-hmm. Don't be frightened.
No, that's fine. Mm-hmm.
I have come to realize that I don't think a lot is going to be changing anymore in my mental attitude, my mental outlook, my living my life, as it were. I think it's become pretty stabilized. Unfortunately, it's stabilized in the region of life, as opposed to the stabilized when you, good morning, it's part of life. So I have just come to realize that I'm going to be living the rest of my life. So that's that. Daniel.
Yeah, I mean, you know that is a choice.
Well, you know, a lot of things are a choice. Absolutely, undeniably, unequivocally, that is true. So much of our lives is choice. And some people even say that all of our lives are choice in that, yes, our Lord Jesus will throw cancer in your stomach or in your prostate, mm-hmm. but it's how you deal with it. That's your choice of how you live your life with all circumstances is your choice. You can smile through it, work through it, be brave through it, or you can whimper and cry and be a wussy pussy, nanny wanny, no one wants to be around you person. So it is choice to some degree. Choice. We have a choice in how we react. That's it. We choose how we react. Daniel, how are you?
I would like to meet the architect of this house. And I would like to punch him in the nose.
Why the nose? Go just, low.
We bought this house in November of 2019. So we've been here a little over a year. And one thing that became obvious to us immediately is that there is no closet space in the house other than in the bedrooms. Like, you know, the walk-in closets in the bedroom. I would love to first ask the architect, where did you envision me putting my vacuum cleaner? Where exactly, you know, did you envision me having a hallway closet or some kind of closet that I could put brooms and a vacuum cleaner and whatnot? And it just seems really odd that there's no places to do those things. And so right now, you know, our vacuum cleaner kind of sits in the bedroom in the open because we have nowhere to put it. I have designs to build a closet and then I will, you know, hide it. But I would like to ask that question. The other question I would like to ask,
ask anything, yes.
And I think this is far more relevant to my mood today, is the garage is 18 feet deep. And the truck that I want to buy is 18 feet long. And if with a trailer hitch on the back, it's not going to fit in my garage, which irritates the fuck out of me because everything that I read says that a standard garage should be like 20 by 24 for a standard two-car garage. So, and some of them are even 24 by 24. And I'm just like, why would you build a garage incapable of holding a truck?
maybe you could park it sideways.
No, because it's narrower than it is wide, than it is deep.
Oh.
I'm very irritated by that.
I can tell. You know, I can tell that there is a level of irritation here about the size of your garage.
I have my eyes on a Ford F-150. I built it from scratch on the website. I have everything that I want on it. It's a lovely truck. And I'm ready to trade in my little sports car for a truck because, you know, I'm also buying a camper eventually, but I wanted a truck because I need to haul things out of the yard to the dump and other things like that, carry furniture here to the house, do other things like that, and eventually tow my trailer, my camper.
Many years ago, we had an F-150 red truck.
Yes.
That Drew drove to work.
Yes.
And it was terrible for him because he would go over the canyons with no weight in the back of the truck. And if there was any moisture on the road at all, he really had to fight the butt end of the truck kind of moving on its own, on its own cognizance. Is that a correct? I don't know if that's a correct word, but I'll throw it out there. On its own. Oh, fuck it. But yes. It was moving on its own.
Yes. Moving right along.
And I will tell you this.
Loose and fancy free.
Yeah. Nothing counts to nothing. Don't touch me down there, please. It was so convenient for everything from Christmas trees to boxes. It was wonderful for that reason. However, for daily commuting, it sucked.
So good news. Yes. My daily commute is up the stairs to my bedroom. And also good news, I live in Florida. We don't have a lot of hills here, so we don't have to worry about cresting the canyon.
You know, you say I live in Florida a lot, so you have a lot of explanation to that state.
I'm just saying, it's a very flat state.
It's kinky.
It's a very flat state.
Well, first of all, it looks like a penis. Yes. It's the penis of the United States.
But also, in much the same way that we don't really camp, we glamp.
Yes.
It's not so much a, you know, starter F-150. It's got a lot of stuff on it that would keep it from doing
stuff. Ours was very, very basic.
Yeah, this has got the everything. This has got all the bells and the whistles.
Oh, unfortunately, it has no place to be put once you've purchased it.
I'm so angry by that.
Angry by that. You know, it's interesting that you are angry about size and closets and you're a homosexual.
I know. Maybe we should investigate that, but it is not on the board for us to talk about today.
Oh, it isn't on the damn.
Why did we dip our toe into it? I don't know. But first of all, we don't have a bumper for this, but I feel like we should have some kind of retraction noise or something.
Oh, yeah. You said that the last time I needed a big retraction.
I believe, Scott, you have a retraction to print for this edition.
It's time for a retraction. I would like to say, first of all, I would like to thank my friend Tom Digger, my dear precious friend, for tweeting me, "Your husband Drew is 58, not 57," meaning that my friend, my dear precious friend, knows my husband's age and I don't. So I would like to present a public apology to my husband for not knowing how old he is.
Okay.
But and specify that he is 58 years old, will be 59. Oh, diddly-doo. That's one of my messages coming through. Diddly-doo.
Yes.
He will be 59 December the 16th.
Okay. And as I pointed out on the pre-show, it is tricky because my mother also had a December birthday. And so it's always that you can't just go by the year and do the math because, oh, wait, they weren't born till almost the next year. So it's easy to get that number off. Secondly, the reason that Tom knows these things is because he mentally establishes how far people away are from death. That is part of his kink there.
He can arrange their final.
He likes to keep track of, like, if you're below 55, he has no idea how old you are. He's like, unless you're out of shape. Like, if you're, you know, an out of shape person below 55,
forget about it.
Then he'll know your age.
Your final needs, like, your final necessities, your final expenses.
He probably knows Adam's age.
Also, he's the same age as Drew. So he knows how old both of them are.
I like my...
Adam, he knows how... Definitely he knows how old Adam is.
I like my explanation better. It's to keep track of who's... I'm just going to tell myself that that's what it is. Anyway, so...
Yeah.
This week...
Yeah, so that... Yes, that retraction was taken care of. Thank you. Thank you for that. That was the retraction.
So this week...
Yes.
We started the process.
You got turd in your
my
pocket?
My siblings.
Oh.
We started the process of attacking the house, right? So we met up on Sunday and we came up with the plan, which was a good plan. It was not my plan. It was my brother's plan. It was a good plan nonetheless, which is there are several pieces of furniture in this house that people want. Let's focus on getting stuff out of those pieces of furniture. You know, the stuff out of the drawers and whatnot. And then they can come and get that furniture. And then we have more room and we can take more inventory, you know. So the things that we know that people are going to take, let's just get those cleared out. And let's not worry about the, you know, everything else right now. Let's just do that. And then we can get those out of the house and then we'll have more space. Good plan, right?
Well, it seems to be.
Yeah. So we did that.
I have a sense that it didn't turn out the way it was supposed to, but that's okay.
No, it's all right. So
I'm jumping ahead.
We started doing that. And then it turned out to be very non-contentious, right? The rules were established thusly. There are four kids. And the four kids, according to the rules of the estate, the four kids get everything split evenly. So... whatever, you know, when the house sells, whatever, we all get a quarter. So it's like there's no the person that are the executors of the estate are my next oldest brother, Les, and my sister, Cindy. They're co-executors of the estate. So they make decisions like signing for things and whatnot. But it was laid down that, okay, because people have kids, like my nephews, that if my nephews wanted a piece in the house, a piece of furniture in the house, they could have it as long as none of the kids wanted it. If a kid wanted it, it overwrote the, so if I wanted a dresser that my nephew wanted, well, I get dibs because I'm a kid. You're a grandkid. So I have five nephews. Like I said, I have five nephews.
You'll get it.
I have excellent relationships with four of my nephews.
With four of them, apparently, because the one is tricky that mm-hmm. you can't remember.
Mm-hmm. I have excellent relationships with four of my nephews, and one of my nephew is a deeply religious, crazy person who married an even crazier, deeply religious woman. And my favorite sport prior to my mom dying was any family gathering where his wife was required to be there, I would go and stand in the room she was in because as soon as I showed up in a room that she was in, she would leave that room and go to another room so that she was not in the same.
It was a fun game.
So I would just meander and then try to come in from behind so she doesn't quite see me in the room. And then she has that panic look on her face where she has to move to another room and everything. So suddenly...
the embodiment of Satan, you homo, right. You.
So we had divvied up a lot of the furniture and... gotten some plans for what to do with some stuff. And there were other things that we didn't quite know what we were going to do, then they needed to get appraised or they, you know, the Hummel figurines and, you know, just things that we needed to figure out what to do with that people didn't particularly want. Anyway, so earlier this week, I get this message in our little group chat with my siblings that Ryan, that's his name, that's the crazy, crazy religious one. Ryan and Deanna, that's the crazy woman, would like to look at what furniture was not claimed because they have a house in Georgia that they want to furnish.
Fuck them.
And would that...
Fuck them.
Would that be okay?
I could stop you right now. Whatever they want, mm-hmm. say that you want.
Well, let me get to it. So okay. I
stepped on the punchline. I'm sorry.
So the thing, when we say furniture, right? Most of the furniture that, I don't want to say it's worth anything, but most of the nicer furniture, most of the furniture that anyone cares about has already been spoken for. Like we have an antique buffet in the dining room that my brother wanted. And we have, you know, the piano that we all learned how to play piano on and my nephew's going to take that. And, you know, the dressers that used to belong to my grandmother and, you know, the quilt box that belonged to John Adams, President John Adams, is coming to my house. And all of those things had been claimed. So the only things left were kind of generic Ethan Allen beds and couches and, you know, some recliners and stuff. Nothing that anyone cared about particularly. But then suddenly yesterday, I get a call from my brother, Les, who's like, hey, they're asking about the silver.
Oh, my God.
And I remember that you were looking at it on Sunday. Did you want that? And I was just like, yes.
Oh, my God.
I was like, and I said to my brother, who, by the way, is a Muslim, I think you should just remind her that every piece of furniture in this house has been touched by gays and Muslims.
Yes.
And it is no doubt cursed.
They got the germs all over them, baby.
So my brother, looking out for us here, has decided to claim all of the silver and pewter and Waterford crystal and stuff that, why they would need Waterford crystal for their hunting house in Georgia, I have no fucking clue. But no, you're not taking the Waterford crystal. No.
Thanks. Whose child is this?
This is my brother's son, my brother's oldest son.
And is your brother religious?
No, not, I mean... His wife is moderately religious, but not, you know, like super religious.
So they caught the cooties independently.
Yeah, I think they met at church and then she was just really, really...
Well, fuck her.
Very religious.
And fuck him. Mm-hmm. And they can go get stuff at the Goodwill and they can eat shit and die. No, you don't want to walk into a room where I am, bitch. Mm-hmm. Honey, you don't get the Waterford candlestick mm-hmm. unless I shove it straight up your ass, pull it out of there, and then cunt ream you with it. But I don't want to be angry.
So I was given this decanter, a Waterford decanter and cordial glasses. So it's about 12 Waterford cordial glasses and this large Waterford decanter. And the reason...
Cha-ching!
Well, no, but the reason that my family wanted me to have it was because there's a story about that particular set.
My cha-ching was not you're getting rich. My cha-ching was that's a very expensive piece. I know Waterford crystal. Yes.
So then okay. You'll enjoy this story. When I was a young man and was dabbling in the magical arts... learning how to do sleight of hand. And, you know, I fancied myself at 13, 14 years old. I fancied myself quite the magician.
For
Christmas, I would get those magic sets, you know, that make the balls disappear and everything.
Oh,
and
so I've made balls disappear too.
I learned this trick whereby I could manifest a glass, a stemmed glass out of just a handkerchief. Stemmed glass.
God, you didn't break the water for did you, Daniel?
Why would you walk all over my goddamn story? So I'm standing as I perfected this trick. I, of course, go and grab one of the Waterford glasses for the big unveiling of it. And I'm standing in our Florida room, which, by the way, has terrazzo flooring. And the looks on their face go from delight and wonder apparate yes. the goblet to horror and fear as it tipples out of my hand and shatters on the ground. And yeah, I had to mow a lot of lawns to replace that goblet.
Fuck. Oh God.
And the decanter and the decanter has a chip in the rim of it because as I was leaving to go to guitar practice one day, the neck of my guitar slapped it and chipped the top.
Well,
of
you've made that absolutely worthless piece of shit. So you do deserve it.
Right. It's worth nothing anymore.
You've ruined it. So here, let Daniel have it.
Well, there you go. That was the ticket. That was the thing on our Trello. Religious furniture squatting is like these people that wouldn't even show up to the funeral are now going to. They want the furniture out of the house.
It's revolting.
It wouldn't be so bad if it was even their house, their primary house, and everything. But they're buying a double wide in Georgia because they like to go up there and hunt. So this is furniture for their double wide.
These are charming individuals. Yeah. I'm okay with the double wide. I'm not really okay with Georgia at all. However, good God, hunt for fuck's sake. Or let's go kill something and watch it die at my hand. That's fun.
Yeah, then they post pictures of it on Facebook. So all my great nieces have blood on their face from shooting their first deer.
Okay. That is disgusting beyond words. What else is on our Trello, Daniel? I don't have it in front of me as we speak.
Something about healthcare and your friend.
Oh, God. Well, you know, it's a grand topic that we will never, ever, ever fix or come to any kind of...
Well, not with that attitude.
...methodology. Well, that pretty much is my attitude. But it's about the healthcare system in America. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're the only modern country, the only civilized country that has a for-profit medical system.
Yeah, we're the only member of NATO, yes.
Which is just... Anyway, I have a friend who I have made, believe it or not, through YouTube. I became first a fan of her videos, but then we began to correspond and became like old-fashioned pen pals, and we're really through those correspondences and talking. We've become very close. She was in her living area one day with a flouncy skirt on and leggings, mm-hmm. and was very cold. They live in New Jersey.
It does get cold there, yes.
Yes. So she went to warm herself by the little tiny fireplace and managed to catch her skirt on fire and her leggings on fire, and the leggings melted. She basically got third-degree burns about 10% of her lower body. Monstrously horrible, frightening, scary burns. And Scary Burns was my stripper name. So they took her to the hospital, and I was corresponding with her back and forth in the hospital. And what incited this topic for the Trello and for us to speak about is that her biggest concern was not the horrific pain that she was in, not that her leg is going to be semi-deformed from the burns, not the procedures of the skin grafting and all the hell that she's going to have to go through. Her biggest concern was the fact that she does not have medical insurance of any kind, and how is she going to pay for this, and how is this not going to tear the family apart? That was what was on her mind more than healing, more than relaxing and taking care. She was panicked about health care, and it just said to me on a very personal level, what the fuck are we going to do about this? How the hell can we continue to be a civilized nation and have a system that is for profit? I don't get it. And like I said, I seriously doubt that you and I are going to find the answer in our program today.
Well, but I really wanted to vent for her sake. You're wrong. Oh, it's public health care. Sorry, okay. Bernie Sanders. When the 90% of the 2% of the 4% pitch in and help on the 6%, then no, it's
8% will get the 10.
Yeah, no, it is. I feel like Democrats have just really sucked at getting their point across, because in their minds, it's a, why would I need to explain this? This is air. How do you not understand how air works, right? It's like, but the fact is, you kind of have to explain these things to Republicans. And we don't do a very good job of doing that. So when they hit back with things like, well, you know, our insurance, insurance companies employ thousands, millions of people in the United States. And if you were to get rid of the insurance companies, then, people would be out of jobs and blah, blah, blah. It's like, we never counter with, you do know that insurance companies still exist in countries that have socialized medicine. Right? You do know that you can always pay for better healthcare through insurance, but we're just talking about basic healthcare. You shouldn't make a profit off of breaking your arm, right? If you want to be in a private hospital room and have, a top-tiered specialist for something that is not life-threatening, then yeah, you can have private insurance that will pay for that for you. That doesn't change. But so much of it is just presented in this zero-sum game of, well, if we have socialized healthcare, then all healthcare will suck because it's all basic healthcare. And the irony of it is that,
yes,
because we don't have that, what ends up becoming our socialized healthcare in America are the emergency rooms, which is the most expensive healthcare that we provide.
Yes.
So we, the middle class, are paying for people who cannot afford health insurance to have the most expensive healthcare that they can possibly have.
Yes.
And
that is the stupidity. But once again, the entire motivation of the Republican Party has it's become very apparent, is making money for themselves,
yes.
is making enormous, disgustingly vulgar amounts of money for themselves. But also, they have gained an unbelievable talent at presenting these false notions as fact to the voting people,
yeah.
the voting public. They have managed to create scenarios and concepts and ideas that people who make $40,000 a year don't want a $15 minimum wage,
right?
Because it's wrong,
right?
And it
is not even just the Republicans, right? The news media did this with Bernie Sanders when he said, "Well, we can have socialized medicine," and then they said, "Yes, but will you raise our taxes?" And they said this to Elizabeth Warren, too. And they just focused themselves like some kind of autistic person on that one phrase. It's like, will you raise our taxes? No matter how many times they explained, although your taxes will go up, they will not go up nearly as much as you pay currently in your insurance premium. So your net result is that you will be paying less out of every paycheck. So, yes, that $100 and $130 charge on your paycheck that goes to your health insurance for your company, right, if you actually have it, will no longer be there. But instead, your taxes will go up by, let's say, $60. So you're still saving $70, you know.
But we can't do nuance.
That's the problem with our healthcare system, is that Americans can't do nuance.
It's the American public that has become sucking at the teat of Fox News, which is all about creating profit for these people, creating more money for these people. That is the machine that Murdoch created, was to make the rich richer.
Yeah.
And they are able to present these messages that even the poorest of our population bite into, and it's terrifying.
It is. Because it preys on their greed, right? When someone who it would clearly benefit economically turns these things down, it is because in their mind, they will not be economically disadvantaged for long. They're going to be the ones on top. And
the
so we don't
yes.
want to hurt them, because when I become a millionaire, I don't want it to affect me.
I don't have anything else to say other than this.
Yes.
I wish my friend Amy the very, very best. She won't be hearing this. They amazingly started a GoFundMe, and she was loath to do this, mm-hmm. absolutely loath to do it, and sincerely loath to do it, as was her husband. And they have raised over $100,000 to pay for these wow. astronomical hospital bills. So,
very nice.
Yeah, the kindness of people is amazing. But she doesn't have a massive channel, but she has a very popular channel about frugality and dumpster diving, believe it or not. And but this woman was a social worker until she quit her social worker job. That's so she's constantly giving and taking care of and nurturing and giving, and for this to happen to her was horrible. And that's that the love that is coming in the form of money is really astounding. But to lay in bed, is my original point, which I will say once more and no longer belabor after that, to lay in bed and not think about the fact that I'm going to get the front of my thigh torn off so that they can stick it to the back of my thigh, which is burned. Instead, how am I going to pay for it? And maybe I have to tell them I can't do the surgery because I can't pay for it. It's absurd.
It is.
Something is systemically wrong in this country.
Amen.
Do we have a happier topic, Daniel? Well, I guess not. On that note.
Well, it's happier. See, it's happier from one angle. We'll take it from this angle. I don't know if you've read any of the headlines over the past couple of weeks, but the flu season has been incredibly low this year. It has been the smallest number of flu cases that we have ever had in the United States.
My husband, who is a voracious reader, including newspapers and online articles and all kinds of things, is the yin to my succubus yang of not reading anything, not being aware, not knowing. So he did indeed say, you know, the flu season has been really good this year. And I wonder why that is. Daniel, do you have a theory?
I do. I was thinking about it when I was hearing these stories. And I was like, I thought to myself. I wonder why that is. Is it because the kids aren't in school right now? Because I remember as a child, my dad railed against parents that would take their kids out of school because they had the measles or the chicken pox. He was like, God damn it, just send them to school so everybody gets it all at once and we can be done with it. It's like, So in my mind, I have always thought of schools as just these little breeding grounds of...
their petri dishes.
Yeah. And I was one of the people in the support department of my old job that would actually go to pediatric offices because none of the other support people ever wanted to go to a pediatric office because they would come back sick. Because
yes. You
know, even, I don't know if you've ever been to a modern pediatric office, but they often have two entrances. They have the well child entrance and the sick child entrance, and they separate them by, you know, on the other sides of the building so that, you know, kids don't get sick from the sick kids. Anyway, and I was thinking, well, that's, maybe it's the schools. It's got to be the schools. That's probably why we're not having such a big flu season this year. And then Zach pointed out, well, not all the schools are closed. And there's certainly still people that go to, and people still have kids, and the kids are going out playing without masks and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, huh?
Did he really, really say blah, blah, blah?
Yes, he did. It was okay. It was weird, but he's from Illinois. It's an old Illinois saying, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Okay.
And I got to thinking maybe it's the restaurants.
Hmm. Another possible petri dish.
Because
possible
I know...
petri dish.
Right, yeah, I know that when you make minimum wage and, well, below minimum wage as a waiter or waitress, and you make your living off of tips, if you don't work, you don't make money. And that is a very strong incentive for you to never call in sick, even if you feel like crap, even if you know that you're sick and are now spreading it to other people. I don't think you think that. I don't think you're like actively going, ha ha ha, I'm going to spread it to other people. But
no, but
I
you,
think that
you
is
have
what
to
happens.
Take the chance.
Yeah.
You have to take the chance in order to survive yourself. Yeah.
But so I'm curious if anyone's doing any studies on these. I realize I could just Google it and find out, but I'm just curious.
But you know what? I would hazard a guess that it is a combination of not only those two things, but as we said in an earlier show, you and I.
Just you and I.
I don't know that song, or I would have happily sung along with you.
Just you and I, sharing our love together.
Why don't I know this
song?
It's
a Lionel Richie, somebody else song. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Because normally, I take great pride in knowing almost every song that you sing, unless it's some kind of Disney thing, and then that just annoys me. There... As I said in an earlier show, the thing that shocked me most, and it was a very early show because we were talking about the beginnings of the pandemic or the whatever. What shocked me most about the coming knowledge of this situation was how many events, how many things in our lives involve being close to other people. Mm-hmm. Everything. From grocery shopping to sporting events to movie theaters to everything that we do as a society, with rare exception, involves being with a lot of people and being close with a lot of people.
Yes.
So I think if I would conjecture a theorem, I think that it isn't just the schools or the restaurants. It is the massive controlled situation where we haven't been next to each other, where mm-hmm. for example, the UPS guy forgot to pick up a package that he was supposed to pick up as he was delivering another one. So Drew ran out with the flappy receipt that he'd left, and the guy stopped at his truck down the driveway. Drew brought the package and the receipt, set it down in the middle of the driveway, went back to the thing, and the guy came out of his truck for them, picked up the thing. So it, watching it was like watching a funny silent movie show. But that's another thing of why we are not contacting one another. We're not spreading our germs to one another.
And it can also be the masks too, right? Maybe the masks are cutting
absolutely.
Down.
Absolutely. Now, schools are notoriously petri dishes because the kids spread it back and forth, and then the kids bring it home to their parents. There's a great meme, and I wish I could quote it correctly, but I will paraphrase it, that I didn't realize how strong my immune system really wasn't until I had a kid sneeze directly into my eyes telling me a story. They don't know to cover their mouth, so they'll sneeze right into your eyes.
Yes.
I think it's a combination of everything. At what cost? Then you say to yourself, hey, that's great that the flu season is so little and all those people didn't die. But look at the price that we fucking paid for this.
Yeah. But had those people gotten vaccinated, if more people would take the flu shot every season, then we would have record low flu transmission.
I have never had a flu shot.
Wow.
Ever in my life.
When I worked for the hospital system, it was... They were not legally allowed to require it, but you could not work if you didn't get a flu shot.
My sister, who's an epidemiologist, who actually got COVID and has no idea how, and has recovered fully from it. She got the, what do they call those? The immune, she got the immune, the immunity vaccine thing. That,
she
or,
got
what
the
is
vaccine.
It called? No. She didn't get the vaccine. She got the, I can't remember, antibody something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She still has to get the vaccine, but she's recovered. Anyway, she said the thing about the flu shot is, yes, you should get it. You should get the flu shot. But where it's not effective is these flus pop up and mutate.
They try to guess what flu is going to be popular.
And it really, it's a little bit effective, but it isn't super effective. But once again,
but even these, you know, because I've been hearing a lot of these stories recently about, well, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is only 70% effective and the other two are 90. So I want to do that.
I haven't heard any of this.
But the point that they're trying to make in all these things is, when you're dealing with large numbers, when you're dealing with millions and hundreds of millions of people, it's like those percentages are great. It's like 75. If we had 75% immunity, then that's great. That's still herd immunity. We're good. It's like, don't concentrate on that. The difference between being 90% effective and being, you know, 78% effective, which is, you know, 12 points lower, whatever, is just not, it's not that big of a deal. Stop looking at the numbers. These are not. Also, they come up with these numbers based off of their clinical trials, and the Johnson & Johnson clinical trials were done overseas, so it was a different population. So we don't know. It could have been the strains that they were dealing with over there that wasn't effective with. So stop it. Just stop. Whatever vaccine that you are able to get for the coronavirus, please take it.
I agree. I'm going to get shot when it's time to get shot.
Why haven't and you I'm, yet? Aren't you 65?
No, I'm 65 in May. Now you're supposed to say, wow, you don't even look like you're in your 50s.
I was thinking to myself, if I were you, I would have already been down there going like, look at my driver's license. Yeah, I'm 65. Just
I can't. It's such a complicated. Here, it's very difficult to get the thing. Now, you can get in a car and get in a huge line at Dodger Stadium and wait in line for hours at Dodger Stadium, and they'll come by in your car and shoot you in the arm. It's a difficult thing here to get the shot yet. It isn't super easy. But I also have my own... I'm really not going to get into, because I think I have to wrap, because I'm the guy. Mm-hmm. I think I have to wrap this up soon, do I not?
Yes, you do. Yes.
Okay, so I will just say this. One of the reasons that I don't want the shot is because once I get the shot and I'm immune, I'm going to have to go to the dentist to get my teeth cleaned. And I really, really don't want to go to the dentist to get my teeth cleaned. So I'm putting off the shot as long as I can. Daniel?
Yes, Scott?
Once again, that lightens my Tuesday to spend time with you and to interchange ideas and to look at your adorable face and your beautiful hands. I love your hands, but it's time for us to say goodbye to all our company.
Now it's time to say goodbye to all our company.
Catch you on the rebound, you dirty motherfucker. Now please suck on my peen.
That was good. Downright rude. Please suck on my peen. Goodbye, Scott. Oh,
good night, Daniel.
Thank you for listening to That Darn Elvis. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email us contact@thatdarnelvis.com or send us a voicemail by going to voicemail.thatdarnelvis.com. You can always find us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thatdarnelvis. On Twitter, Scott is @AndyVera and Daniel is @DanielBrewer.
This show is a proud member of the Pride 48 Podcasting Network. Check out more great shows at pride48.com.